You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, welcome, welcome, welcome to Fuller Woman Radio. I'm your host, Cassie, and we have some very special guests in the room today. Thank you for your patience. We're running a little bit behind because I was trying to be a big girl and have some new toys, and I failed miserably, so my apologies. But to my left, I have the incomparable comedian, Crystal P. Wait, there's more to your title too. There's philanthropist. There is community activist. There is your best friend in your head. Everything that's good in the world. Crystal P.
Thank you. I'm about to spit all over this. I'm so excited. Look at me spitting all over.
Just that good.
I'm like, who's she
it's
talking
juicy.
About?
And to my right, I have the adorable, very handsome Jervis. Let's see. What are your titles
he's
as well?
Actor.
He's an actor. He
singer.
Is singer. He is a model.
He is host.
He is your best boyfriend in your head.
Hey, everybody.
Jervis Canty.
I just want to add to Crystal's adjectives that describe her.
Yes, yes.
She's a singer.
She is a singer.
She's a drummer.
Yes.
She makes the best cakes in the city of Detroit.
Listen, she is the master baker, master class.
Crystal is it.
Yes, she is everything.
Yes, she is.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, good. I'm glad to have you here with me. And we are in a very, very, how should I say, there's a lot of going on in the world today.
Oh, my goodness.
In particular. So we're going to try to keep it as light mm-hmm. as possible, since everything is so heavy and so triggering for a lot of people in our timelines and through our social circles. So I want to first talk about Crystal.
Okay.
And, you know, lately there's been a lot of talk about women in comedy, mm-hmm. How their rightful place, you know, equal pay is always a conversation, but also just opportunities that may come and that are not possibly afforded to people who are more qualified in some cases, but because you are a woman, mm-hmm. sometimes you are left out of the conversation. And making opportunities for other women is a struggle, but I know you are one who always gives opportunities to other people. I just want to know, how did your journey start in comedy, knowing that you had a hard road? Because there wasn't many examples out there for you. So how did you start?
I just kind of just jumped in head first. Uh-huh. I'd always wanted to be in the entertainment industry, even as a child, mm-hmm. Watching TV, one of my favorite shows, Good Times and Sanford and Son and Jeffersons. And I would always watch because I wanted to be a actress, and I could always picture myself and see myself in the script or mm-hmm. in the cast and stuff. And mm-hmm. when I would see little kids come on, I would think, you know, that should be me. That should be me. And one day, I told my best friend, I used to be a reserve for the Detroit Police Police Department. Mm-hmm. I had been involved in a shooting, and it was kind of like your life flashes before your eyes. Mm-hmm. And I said, before I leave this earth, I'm going to do what it is that I've always wanted to do. And mm-hmm. I shared with my best friend, Monique, not the comedian Monique, my best friend of over 46 years. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I think I want to do stand up. She said, you should have been doing that. She encouraged me go out to audition for the show NBC was having. Mm-hmm. And so I flew out to LA with really no money in my pocket at all. I just barely flew out there, put the, you know, the flight on my credit card. And I had gotten the money from my dad. She said, Asher, Dad, said, my dad is not about to pay for pipe dreams in my 30s. And so he did. He gave me the money. You know, I charged the plane ticket and literally only had $100. I had $65 that I spent on a rental car trying to get around L.A. And I had $35 left to eat, put gas in the car, whatever it is that I was going to do. My husband at the time, he had a cousin that lived out there. They said, oh, come on by. And they fed me. And I went audition and just standing in the line. I mean, it was a sea of comedians, men and women. Meeting all these people because I didn't know anything about comedy, had never been on a stage. And we auditioned at the Laugh Factory, which is one of the major comedy clubs in L.A. Once I got on to do the audition, and I thought I had a pretty decent audition considering I had never done comedy, so I didn't have a gauge. But just being on that stage, I felt something. It just felt right. And not knowing whether or not I was going to make it on this show, I just knew that is where I belong. I didn't know how I was going to make it happen, but I knew I was supposed to be up on that stage. And I returned home. I didn't know anything about the comedy scene. And somebody had a contest. I went to this contest in the Detroit area, and I ran into Phoenicia Banks, who is now deceased. But she did Christian comedy and clean comedy. And we were doing this contest, and we felt like we did not belong at that contest. We felt so out of place, and we just began talking. And she was telling me about the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak and how they do open mic. And I said, well, I'm going to sign up. And we just developed a kinship and a friendship there at this contest because we really were like fish out of the pond. And I went on to November 4th of 2004. I did my first open mic at Royal Oak Comedy Castle, Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And from there on, then on, I just did not stop. It just, as I got on the stage more and more, it just felt right. And I had prepared a 7-minute set because open mic is usually 5 to 7 minutes. Prepared the 7-minute set. And, you know, for the first time, I was really hitting it probably the first 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, and the last couple died down a little bit. But about 60 people came out to support me. So, you know, having that support of friends and family, despite me, you know, being the first time and not being this major force in comedy, it propelled me to keep wanting to do it. Support is very important, but I would also tell anybody that wants to be an actor or comedian or what have you, even if you don't have the support, you have to support yourself and support your mind, support your dreams, and support your thoughts. I just never gave up, but I know it's something innate. It's just always been in me. I have always entertained people as a child. Where growing up in my day, kids were supposed to be seen and not heard. I was one of those kids that had to be seen and heard. And I kind of got the exception out of my siblings. My mom would let me sit around the adults. And I just, you know, be like the good ship lollipop and doing whatever I could do to entertain people. I've always loved to see people laugh and smile and just enjoy me. I really like to entertain. So I just say, tell people, just go for it. I just went in there head first, and I kind of was backwards. Even though I did the open mic, I also found people who were having backyard parties or whatever. Hey, can, how about if I went up and just, you know, hosted or entertained your people and they would let me. And I did that for free and just to get my material out there, get my name out there. And it worked. It ended up working to my favor. When I first started, blacks did not hire me to do comedy. It was, I know it sounds crazy, but blacks didn't hire me to do comedy.
Was it because you were too clean? Or
And I think that was probably 90% of it. Nobody knew how to, quote unquote, classify me or put me in a particular bag. I was too black to be white and too white to be black. Mm-hmm. I didn't curse, so it seemed as if I wasn't hardcore enough for the black audiences. So when I began getting booked as an opener, and I moved, I really didn't stay an opener. I really jumped from not doing comedy at all to being a feature because I was strong. And so I would travel the road. I had been in over 90 cities in Michigan. I get in my car and I get booked through certain people and certain comedy agencies. And I would walk into these bars and I would be the only black person in the bar, the only black person probably in the city, in some of the cities that I'd gone into. I went into places like Alba, which you can pretty much only find in Almanac. Now, there's Alma, Michigan, and there's Alba. Alba has one single flashing light in the city. It's about 17 miles west of Gaylord.
I'll be afraid to go.
And I would go places like Petoskey, Cadillac, which you see a lot of the Amish. They have the log cabin homes, really cold there. Went to Sterling, and I remember getting booked for Sterling and thinking, oh, Sterling Heights. And I looked at the zip code and I said, nah, that ain't Sterling Heights. And it was up there near Standish and Pinconning, West Branch and Traverse City.
Wow.
I had gone all over state, west part of the state, South Holland and Grand Rapids and Kentwood, various places. In the Thumb in Caseville, where they're known for the Cheeseburger Festival. And people would say, are you on the road by yourself? And I would say, well, God is with me. And, you know, I had a little peace with me here and there. And I would just go do my shows. And I remember doing the show in Sterling. And we're on this two-lane highway, and you walk in, and everybody's in their Harley Davidson leather coats on their motorcycles. And I will always
the
break
didn't
the
stop,
ice.
Did it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It almost was like, and I would. That's how I broke the ice when I got on stage. And I said, I know some of y'all looking at me like, did her car just break down? And I remember the lady sitting up front. She was like, oh no, we have black people here. I said, yeah, when they break out of prison down the street, lady, ain't no black people here around all these trees. And that's how I broke the ice. And once I start doing, you know, my routine or what have you, they just drew towards me because they got to see, because they don't see black people up there in a lot of these cities that I'd gone to. And it was like, wow. And then I would sing in my comedy act, and I would do Amazing Grace. So now I'm the only black person. And then you done brought the Lord into the bar. What is wrong with you? And people would just love it. And they'd say, well, can you come sing with me? And they would want me to karaoke after the comedy show and just all kinds of things. And finally, one day I was doing a show. There were some black people in the audience. And they would say, hey, do you do private shows? Yeah. What, you know, I say yeah to everything.
Right.
Even when it came to cakes. If I've never made that cake before, yeah. I just got to make it happen. You got to believe in yourself. And I went back to L.A., told my sister, I said, hey, let's go. We flew back to L.A., courtesy of my dad again. He said, this is the last trip. And he sent his girlfriend with us. So we're out there in L.A., and we're going to different shows because I had to be seen. And Tom Joyner at the time had his TV show. And if you've ever been to L.A. and gone to any of the sitcoms or the shows that they record, in between takes or moving the cameras, they'll have people sing or whatever. And I said, the next time they ask for somebody, I'm raising my hand because I'm going up there to do me some stand-up comedy. And I got up at the Tom Joyner show, and they thought I was about to sing, and I started doing stand-up. And they were like, wait a minute, because they had a professional stand-up. We don't want to mess it up, you know, for him. And they, you know, got me down. And J. Anthony Brown said, he turned and looked at me. He said, you don't have to get ready when you're already ready. And he said, that girl over there is ready. And they took my information down, and then they canceled the time joined a TV show literally within a week or so. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine, Beth Payne, was also a comedian and done voiceover and work on PBS on the children's station. Mm-hmm. She sent me a text. She said, girl, I see you out there. So it just felt good. And so that encouraged me. Okay, the show is canceled, but don't give up. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept going. I kept going. And sure enough, my cousin worked for Magic Johnson at the time. And Magic Johnson has the 24-hour fitness centers. Mm-hmm. They're having this grand opening. And we go out there to meet my cousin, who I never met. I just met his mother because my dad had given me her number. Mm-hmm. So we're going to surprise him. I go up in the thing. Is so-and-so here? They said, who is it? I said, tell him it's his baby's mother. And of course, he comes out, and I'm like, hey, I'm your cousin Crystal from the Detroit area. And so he didn't know I did comedy. Mm-hmm. And they have all this stuff set up at the fitness center. And if you've ever watched Living Single with mm-hmm. Queen Latifah, at the beginning when they're doing We Are Living, mm-hmm. and the girl is kicking and dancing, that's Big Les. She's a choreographer. Yeah. Right. She was on BET. Mm-hmm. She's there doing a fitness class for the grand opening. And so my sister says, you know, hey, my sister does comedy. She said, oh, you do? She said, have you ever done Chocolate Sundays? Mm. I said, no, but I'd like to. She gives me the guy's number. His name is Pookie Wigginton, which mm-hmm. was a big basketball star at Seton Hall. I call him up. He said, well, my show is booked 9 months in advance. Mm. This is the Black show at the Laugh Factory on Sundays.
Kevin Hart, I've seen his performances
there. And Chocolate Sundays is S-U-N-D-A-E-S, as in a Sunday. Yeah. And he said, well, if you're from Detroit area, I'm going to go ahead and put you on the show. I'll rearrange some stuff. So I'm geeked. I go down there, and sure enough, on this show was Mike Epps.
Wow.
And Foolish from Detroit. Uh-huh. And so I get up and do my thing. And after I do my thing, I go up in the little VIP area mm-hmm. on the second floor. Kevin Hart, he reached, he said, oh, you're funny. And I'm just sitting up there taking it all in. I'm sitting next to Lavelle Crawford and all these, Chris Rock was in there that night. Mm-hmm. Just like, wow, look at all these comedians. And after the show, Foolish comes up to me. He said, are you from Detroit? I said, yeah, right outside Detroit area. He said, I'm going to be here for a week working. He said, I'm going to call you when I get back. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. You know, you always get the don't call us, we'll call you. Right. And literally a week later, Foolish called me. This was 2005. Mm-hmm. And he gave me my first paid show, $150 to do 5 minutes of comedy in Toledo with Howie Bell, another Detroit comedian who's mm-hmm. toured on the P. Diddy Bad Boys of Comedy. Mm-hmm. And what Foolish told me was, and it stuck to me even almost 14 years later, is don't worry about the type of comedy you do. Mm-hmm. Just be funny. Funny is funny no matter what.
Right.
And we call Foolish's rooms gang initiation rooms because if you can make Foolish's crowds laugh, mm-hmm. you can make anybody laugh. And I went up there and people, and I'm talking about people who have probably shot somebody, hung out in the streets, sold drugs, used drugs, drink, whatever, and then it put me in there mm-hmm. and make these gangsters laugh.
Right.
It spoke a lot. So I remember those words that Foolish spoke to me because it's still true to this day. Mm-hmm. Don't allow the type of comedy or your brand of comedy. You just go in and do you and let those people come up to who you are and not try to go down or meet their level. Just be you. Do your brand of comedy and you will be fine. So that is when I started getting into the Black market, mm-hmm. When Foolish basically introduced me to the urban market. And then I went on to open up for the P. Diddy Bad Boys of Comedy mm-hmm. at the Fox that October 05. And then I came back in 06 and opened up for Steve Harvey. Mm-hmm. So they have been at the Fox Theater twice within a year mm-hmm. And had only been doing comedy for 2 years. Mm. Spoke volumes because many comedians had never stepped foot on the stage. You're talking about 5,000 people, two sold out shows. It was monumental for me. And then I, you know, did the music hall with Incognito and some other sold out shows mm-hmm. with some great artists over the years. So I really, really have been blessed mm-hmm. To have had this type of staying power, mm-hmm. considering I'm not a star or celebrity. I mean, people say, well, you're a Detroit celebrity. And I mean, that's fine and dandy. But I have done a lot. I've done the Apollo. I've taped a show for BET with Vicki Winans. Did Last Comic Standing. I was chosen by Bill Bellamy to do Last Comic Standing. So I've gotten to do things that not only comedians, but women.
Right.
Black or white.
Well, I know the first time that I saw you was in Royal Oak.
At the Comedy Castle.
At the Comedy Castle. I think you were hosting then.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had missed you when I was seeing you first at the very first Full Figure Fashion Week in New York.
Okay.
In 2009.
Now, I actually had on my stilettos then. I was being model instead of being a comedian.
And I think your plane was delayed. You couldn't make it. I wasn't able to see you. And I was like, my goodness, Detroit is here. I'm here. And I had the person from Toronto who started the expo in Canada. She was going to be there.
Somebody actually from New York watching. Really? Right now saying, I remember that.
Yeah. So I was waiting impatiently. And then they said you wasn't going to come. I was like, oh my goodness. So then I made sure that I saw you the first chance I got in Royal Oak. And I was blown away. The whole room was in tears. And I was just like, there's something really, really missing in comedy. Because at that time, 2009, that's like the height of the whole Kings of Comedy, the height of all of that blue comic. And that is what was pervasive in comedy scene, period. You know, Monique was on the rise then, and you didn't see women really that was in a position of notoriety. But it was always the men who was in the forefront. Queens of Comedy didn't come until much later than that. But we knew that there was something special about you.
Mm-hmm.
but we need to take a small break here. So we're going to come back in a few moments with Full Woman Radio.
All right.
Been a skinny girl, I got curves you could see clear across the world. But I'm a real strong sister with a big old dream. You should never judge a book by its cover, you see.
Stand tall, embracing my identity.
Cause ain't a damn thing false when it comes to me. Took a long time, now I'm feeling fancy free. Listen, let me tell you how I came to be. Guess what? I thought that I could never be like the girls on the screen. Straight hair, long legs, I felt so ashamed. Knew my hips would never match what the TV portrayed.
Flashback to when I was about 14.
I had fake long nails and a big old weave. I tried every diet trying to be size 10. Used to get so dizzy that my head would spin. Staring back at me. Cut off my hair, trimmed down my nails real low, hoping that my beauty would show. But today I can say that it feels so good to be me. I can say my curves are beautiful, they make me shine, they make me fine. And now
who was with the comedian who then they kept saying that she lost the back and forth they were having, and then
Wanda, the radio host.
Yeah, and then it went from that to Kevin Hart going on with Tiffany Haddish on an interview defending her about from what Kat said, and then him mentioning Leslie Jones, and Leslie Jones coming up and said, don't mention me at all, because none of you helped me. Mm-hmm. So it's like...
She said Chris Rock was the one that put it
right.
Right.
I really try to stay away from... if I can say this, pissing matches and things of that nature. What I've discovered and what I've found in doing comedy all of these years, and I've performed with men, women, black, white, Hispanic, there is a market for everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There is an audience for each one of us. Many times there are comedians and we'll say, oh, they're not funny to us. And they may not be. Everybody is not funny to everybody. Everybody doesn't look. There are people who do not care for me whatsoever. Mm. And that's fine. But there's room for all of us.
Right.
I know some comedians who make millions and people are like, oh, they're not funny. Honestly, a lot of this is probably 60% funny mm-hmm. and 40% business. A lot of us don't take care of business, and that is the reason why we're not where we should be or where we may want to be.
Right.
Some people don't have promo material, don't have headshots, don't show up on time,
mm-hmm.
Don't return calls. Whatever the issue may be, they may not be taking care of business, which is why they're missing out on opportunities.
Right.
Another side of it is, make your own opportunity.
That's
true.
If you can't get into the club or they won't put you on the sign-up sheet for open mic, start your own open mic. You can have comedy in your basement. Mm-hmm. You can do anything. In my mind, I'm a performer and a lover of music in my head, but I'm really not a singer. Like, I can sing, I can't sing. It's a difference, I and A. And so, but I've always wanted to do a concert. And I said, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a concert. And I did it. I put up my own money. I took 10% of my comedy money from a previous year, mm-hmm. saved it, and put on my own show. I didn't have one sponsor or backer or producer. I produced the show myself, bought the tickets myself, got the artists myself, you know, the musicians and the singers mm-hmm. and the everything that went on. And so I said I wanted to do an all-woman show, more than the eyes can see, which meant, you know me as a comedian, but I'm so much more than your eyes can ever see.
Absolutely.
So when I open the show, I do comedy, which people know me for. Then I bring some comedian friends of mine to continue the show as I go backstage and change.
Mm-hmm.
I come back out, and the next thing people see, they see me on the drums. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why is she walking over to the drums? Because I'm going to show you something
that's right.
that I've always wanted to do.
Right.
And I bought a drum set off of Craigslist. And I began to teach myself in the basement. And then I began to work with another drummer. And I said, I'm going to learn how to play Earth, Wind & Fire because this is what I want to do for my show. And so then I went to the drums and I got off the drums and went to the microphone to sing. And they're like, mm-hmm. wait a minute, she's singing Phyllis Hyman? What just mm-hmm. happened? She doing just Jill Scott. What just happened? Mm-hmm. Then I said, oh, no, wait a minute. I got some more for you. Let me go and pick up this little instrument over here that
right.
I've been playing since I was 8 years old. And I was like, oh, my gosh, she's playing the flute. What just happened? Like, what are my eyes seeing? It's more than your eyes can see. It's more than that you can envision.
Right.
And you have to have a vision beyond just your eyes. Stevie Wonder is blind, and he can see a lot better than most of us.
That's absolutely.
That's true.
He can see a lot better than most of us because he sees beyond what is here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we honored you.
And I still have my award.
You still have in 2000, I believe it was 11. Mm-hmm. The 12.
I remember being with Kim Coles.
Yes, yes. Kim Coles was our keynote speaker. And then we had the Curves in Comedy
mm-hmm.
show afterwards. But we had the Thrive Awards with DailyVenusDiva.com. And that was before your time, George, before you became a model on our on our runway, shutting it down. But at that time, we only were trying to find women who we wanted to honor that were truly thriving in their careers, thriving in their professions, and thriving just in life in general. And the Fuller Woman Expo is like a celebration of mm-hmm. who we are in the moment. And that's what this podcast is about, too. If you're just joining us for the first time, and some people may be new to us, because we're kind of new. This is our fifth episode, but our second season.
Okay.
But we highlight the amazing people that are on their journey to loving who they are in a moment. We want people to live free of society's perceptions of who we
of
are.
What we should be.
So we can become truly who we are to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that you've always done. Like you just had an example of how you rose above what people expected you to be and became who you truly are in front of everyone.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I still have some things. I'm laughing because somebody's on Jervis's live saying, tell Crystal don't sing Strange Fruit. I love Nina Simone. It was one of the songs, but of course, the way she sang it was dark and gloomy.
Right. But dark and gloomy song.
To bring light.
Absolutely.
To not only Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Lynchings. And,
things of that nature. Yeah. Things that are going on today. And she said, girl, I wanted to stab my eyeballs out when you sang it. But that song actually turned out for people who saw it. I think I have it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely love the arrangement. It's dark because we pretty much did it. We were going to do it with no music, and then we started with just maybe we'd do drum, and they added a little bit of keys in it to keep everybody from committing suicide at the show. But one of my favorite tunes to do, Nina Simone, was Bipolar, and I actually played her in a play some years ago and read a lot about her story even before she started really becoming popular amongst our age group. But
she was a victim of domestic violence.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was.
And this is coming up on Domestic Violence Awareness
Month, October
month in October, and we do the network does these sister circles I do them at the Interim House, the YWCA Interim House, and I'm telling you, people who come to the because we. Usually have a packed house in there, and I bring our little things, and we have a different theme every week, and we have a mantra that we say. It's a pilot program that we're doing there. Hopefully, we'll be able to expand to other areas. But I noticed that in these places, because I'm trying to create a sanctuary for them to escape from everything. We have a child care, so they can just put the kids over there,
right.
And we just have them escape. And one thing that they always say in the meetings is that they are looking for an outlet, for a way to express themselves, and they don't get to have that because they have to be strong for their families, strong for their children that's outside of that door, but inside of that room is where they want to be free. And so that's why I think, you know, like actors like you and Crystal, like, I think freedom comes from your art and your craft.
Absolutely. When I go on stage, there's crystal P and crystal clear. I get a little more crystal clear on stage. And I just enjoy the moment.
Right.
People think because you've done TV or you got a couple of checks, that's fine and dandy. But when I get off stage, it was like, okay, you got garbage to take out. You got to go pack lunches. Because, I had children. Young children at the time I started doing comedy. Mm-hmm. So I still had other responsibilities. So while we're on stage celebrating, oh yeah, you've been at the Apollo. Okay. Did you leave some lunch money? Did you do such, we got parent teacher conference. So I never, allow the celebrity or the stardom to really get to me because I still had a life at home, and I still had other responsibilities and things to take care of outside of doing comedy. I was doing other things, plays and baking and designing clothes and just doing stuff. Went back to, I hadn't been on a runway in years. I got on the runway for the first time a couple of months ago, and she said, please, can you model these dresses? And it feels good to be out there. That's just another way to entertain and make people say, look, for people that don't know, I weigh 253 pounds, and people are like, no, you're not that big. And it's like, yes, I am. But to be able to get out there, I wear a size 13 shoe. I'd always been teased about how big my feet were, you know, called ships. Oh, you got ships, you got this. But I started to embrace myself. I'm like, oh, get a pedicure, baby. I got the baddest feet ever, you know.
Right.
And so you had to start turning those negative situations around and embrace it. It took me a long time to embrace myself. But doing comedy has helped. And you put on those clothes and shoes and whatever and just become this beacon of light. But it also becomes a beacon of light for somebody that's on the opposite side of the stage.
Right.
There have been people in my audience that wanted to commit suicide. And they come up to me after the show. I'm so glad that so-and-so brought me here. Or I'm so glad that I showed up. You made me feel so much better about myself.
Right.
Being plus size. And many of us have been teased. Many of us have been bullied. And not just as children. In marriage.
Absolutely.
In relationships. In friendships. In work. At work. A lot of people. We just had a comedian commit suicide a couple months ago. And, you know, we really need to get to a place. We age, but not always mature.
Right.
And we need to start to do that now and show some love and compassion for people, because people are really hurting these days. And people think, oh, because you're 40-something, oh, you're 50-something, it doesn't always go away.
That's so true.
No. It doesn't always go away.
You know, in comedy, you see women who are of size or men who are of size who make them the joke first before anybody says anything else about them.
I am always my own joke. Right. You will never talk about me before I talk about myself.
Exactly.
There is nothing that you can say about me that I haven't already said about myself. I talk about the stretch marks. I've had eczema. Whatever you want to say, I've talked about it. Big feet, fat, gut hanging over. Jokes, one of the jokes people have heard me say was about the Porsche. And that was actually something that happened in real life. My husband, who's now deceased, because I'm a car. I love cars. I'm a lover of cars. And I would collect cars. And, you know, I told him how he loved the junk in my trunk. He said, but you built like a Porsche. Now, if you don't know that a Porsche, the trunk is actually in the front. So that, I bust out laughing. And people say, but he insulted you. But you know what? I'm not going to allow that to put me in the dark. I turned it around and made it into a joke for the stage.
Absolutely.
And went on about my merry little way. So you.
But that's what we have to do. I mean, we have to. As women and men of size, we have to actually create safe spaces around this, however that looks, whatever that looks like. So when it comes to people who come at us who believe that they are supposedly doing it for our own good, or supposedly doing it because they want to give you a compliment, like say if you've lost weight.
Oh, the backhand compliment?
Yeah. Say if you lost
you
weight.
You smell good for a fat girl.
Oh, no, let me tell you. My mother was the professional on that. Hey, fat boy, you look real good today.
Oh!
Well, thank you.
All right now, mama.
And it's so funny because for me, you know, I'm 48 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm just now diving into this entertainment field. And it's not even been two years yet. And before that time, I went through one of the darkest moments of my life where I was depressed. And, you know, without going into the story, I was just depressed. And I got invited to audition. And I'm like, I'm not an actor. No, I'm not coming. And they're like, please come, please. And I went. And just fast forward, you know, things are happening. But I don't think I found that confidence until my 40s. I didn't have any confidence whatsoever. I was so broken
when I started.
You know what I'm saying? And now I'm in the happiest place of my life, because even with the dark stuff, I'm not down.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. I defeat all of that.
And it's never too late. You see some of the actors and actresses these days that didn't start till their 40s and 50s.
Everybody I come in contact with tells me, you are the look that they want.
Right.
You know, regardless to if you're a big guy. Nobody could have told me I ever would have been walking in a fashion show. You know, even when I was a skinny guy. But being a big guy, I'm walking in fashion shows and people are responding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then people are coming to me asking me, will you do this? Will you do that? Will you
the
do that?
The loudest applause at the fashion show that I just did came from me and the fat people. It didn't come from the undernourished on the runway.
Well, my first fashion show was at Cobo Hall, my very first one.
Oh, wow, that's a big place.
It's a big stage. So I practiced by myself. You know, I rented space. I was serious about it, you know. And I realized, like, and I started to get involved in, like, the culture of modeling and because that is really a culture. And it's really difficult to make sure that you have everything together to be successful in it. And I knew after I did it that it probably was not where I wanted to be, because it was so much that had to go into it. But what made me want to do more was because there was people that were at the show that said that they cared less about or didn't even remember who I wore. Is about the feeling they got seeing a reflection of themselves up there. They forgot completely who the designer was and all that. They just wanted to know, how can I do that, or how can I be as empowered as all the women that I was up there with? And so that made me want to produce other opportunities for women to have that same feeling. Because it's rare to have, especially in Detroit, there wasn't really, there's a lot of shows at that time. There was really nothing going on in 2009. There wasn't anything.
No, not for plus size people.
And so I really wanted to create a place where we will be supported and uplifted. And this is our 10th year of doing this, but I've learned that every year there's something more to learn and something new that we have to incorporate into our position, into our message. And we started to talk about how men have an issue with body dysphoria. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that much that time. We only have a few minutes left, mm-hmm. but we're going to definitely have you back mm-hmm. on, Jervis. But, the thing that really, really inspired me too was when, cause we approached with fashion first.
Right.
In a full night of fashion just for the men. And that year, the men were so excited mm-hmm. to be a part of it because they don't get an opportunity. But these men, you know, these are the ones that have like the hookups in the club and can't wait to show it out on Saturday night. You know, they got the stuff. And so, and they came out and I let them have their own personal style. That's what they really wanted to do. And they really enjoyed it. And mm-hmm. they really wanted to know when the next one was. And they were really excited about the opportunity. And they started to open up about how they felt as they were growing up and how they felt being on the stage where they were supported and cheered for. Mm-hmm. And everyone wants to feel that. You know, if they don't feel it, you know, in their everyday life, they just want to feel it.
Let me tell you, that was one of the biggest rushes I think I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was so nervous before I walked out. But once that light hit, uh-huh. it was like I just...
You turned it on.
That thing got real good to me. And I'm looking for another outfit. Like, what am I going to wear? I want to wear something else. But I appreciate so many things. And I wanted to say something to Crystal before
sure.
we left. What I appreciate about Crystal is for her to have the platform that she has or that you have, mm-hmm. you're so free with giving information.
Yes.
Every time I talk to you, it's an experience. We stood in a parking lot in mm-hmm. the winter mm-hmm. talking, and I was telling her how much better I want to get at hosting. And people are telling me, Jervis, you're funny. You should get into comedy. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not a comedian. She was like, well, write a 5-minute and a 10-minute set. Mm-hmm. And those words stay with me. But what I love is Crystal is constantly imparting into people.
Yes.
Every time I watch her, you can see her interaction.
Yes.
And people are getting something from her.
Right.
So, you know, you talk about how you're blessed. That's why you're blessed, because you impart, you know, and for me, I think that's one of the biggest things, because I was so green to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first play, you know, everything that I did, you know, it was like there was always somebody along the way, but there were a lot of people who were just stabbing. Mm-hmm. But Crystal, you give so much life to a room.
Thank you. Absolutely.
So much life to a room.
Absolutely.
And for you to be as funny as you are. You don't use profanity, but I think you're one of the funniest comedians I've ever seen.
Thank you.
And I've been to a lot of the comedy shows, Queens and Kings of Comedy, all of that. But I think you're refreshing.
It's so effortless when mm-hmm. you see her.
You're so,
you know,
refreshing.
It's like she's just up there just talking
that.
To you, like she's sitting right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we
That's
so much love
That's one of the things that
you.
Keep you from being nervous is because mm-hmm. when you view the audience as your friend,
yeah. mm-hmm.
even though they're strangers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's because people are like, you never look. I'm nervous at every show. Even okay. 14 years later, I'm still nervous when I hit the stage. But I do think it's important to share mm-hmm. with people. Everybody needs something.
Yes.
I'm not saying you just give away traits, because you do have to do some of your own work.
Mm-hmm.
You have
do.
To put stuff in action. You have to put your faith in action, your work in action.
Right.
But some of these people are so stiff-lipped. And if you just give... I can't do all the shows.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in Georgia doing the show, why am I tripping that I gave you a show in Cleveland? I can't be in two places.
And
people don't understand that. I remember being out of town. 4 different people had shows and me making number 5.
Mm-hmm.
We all can get a check mm-hmm. somehow, some way.
Absolutely.
It makes no sense. Now, there are times when I pick and choose because I recognize crowds. Some people don't understand a crowd that you should and should not be in front of.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's offered money doesn't mean that you're supposed to be there.
Absolutely.
And so I do pick and choose somebody that I think fits that dynamic or fits that crowd. And some people, you know, may not understand it. Just like with me,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people don't put me in places because they say, hey, this may not be for you.
Right.
And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I used to want to, why won't so-and-so book me? Now that I'm at where I am now,
mm-hmm.
it's okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever God has for me
is for you.
Is for me. Absolutely. And I'm going to be there. And oftentimes he might be shielding you from something or somebody or somewhere you mm-hmm. should not be.
Right.
So it's okay.
It's okay.
It is okay. And know it'll come when it's supposed to come.
Now, I'm going to make sure that we have on our website, mm-hmm. once we get the audio back, the videos will come a little later, but the audio was going to be on our website. We always have links to contact the people that we have
oh,
on the show.
Absolutely.
So we definitely have links to you. So that we
and,
can
and mine is simple. Crystal P is crazy. Whether it's the website,
and also
Twitter,
your Laugh Foundation, too.
Yep, Laugh Foundation mm-hmm. Is where I raised money for, it was for young kids mm-hmm. to do things in the arts. Mm-hmm. Because we always award the academic scholar, mm-hmm. the
absolutely.
Straight A. But we never look at the people who get C's
right.
that may be really talented doing music or gymnastics
right.
or something outside of doing math and
right.
and science and things of that nature. So we try to award those children who are in the arts, photography, something in the arts. And then it started migrating over to young boys
mm-hmm.
because our boys seem to be suffering in our communities.
Absolutely.
And so it could be money for tutoring. It could be money to travel abroad. We've helped children go to Spain and mm. various places abroad, or just money for college, mm-hmm. whether it be books or $1,000 for scholarships. In the first few years, I probably out of my before I even started Laugh Foundation, I'd given tons of money out of my own pocket. And somebody said, well, why don't you do it? So the Laugh Foundation has probably given upwards of about $5,000
oh, so far. Wonderful.
And I get a lot of help from people out in Facebook world. I remember mm-hmm. a young man, he had, I think he wore a size 20 shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to play football, and he came from a home where he was sleeping on the floor. Mm. And mm. I put out a call to my friends. We had uniforms and clothing and food and everything.
That's amazing.
And sent him to college. Mm-hmm. So it's important.
So I'm gonna make sure that people are connected to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also, Jervis, you
I
have,
do a lot of that,
listen,
too.
You are always booked and busy. But if you want to book Jervis, I'll give you your information. It'll be on our website as well.
Everything is Let Jervis Do It.
Let Jervis
All
do
right
it.
All right, now.
Everything is Let Jervis Do
Won't
It.
Won't he do it? Let
you know,
Jervis
and it's
do
so
it.
Funny. I was at work one day. It's so funny.
Uh-huh.
I was at work one day, and one of my coworkers was like, you know, somebody asked her to do something. She was like, Let Jervis Do It. And it hit me. I said, that's my
it.
Name. So it's Let Jervis Do It on all social media. Everything.
Now, coming up for the network, we're having at Bamboo Detroit, which is our offices downtown.
I love that place.
Isn't that a beautiful place?
Mm-hmm.
We're having Mama Conversations with Mothering Justice. And right now it's time for we're gearing up to vote, and mm-hmm. we want to empower women and mothers mm-hmm. who are really already activists in their community.
That's awesome.
So we want to be able to help them register their community to vote and be and part of the policy that is happening and making decisions for their families. So we're having a Mama Conversation. Mm-hmm. We're also Mothering Justice is having a new initiative where you can register people to vote and you get a stipend
okay.
to help with your efforts. So that'll be from 7 to 9 at Bamboo Detroit. We're going to have some food. It's all free. If you register, the first 25 people who register will get free two-hour meter parking outside, so there's no excuses.
You know that's important, that's y'all, because
yes.
Detroit
I
will
know,
tow
right?
your stuff
they will
in
tow it.
New York Minute, okay?
Exactly. So bring your children, and we're just going to have a good time and just trying to empower everyone. And yeah, so this has been an amazing broadcast.
Man, this hour went by.
It
really did go really fast.
LaChina will be back next week. She actually is in New York at RuPaul Drag Race
right
convention, which I really
wish my old makeup artist would go in there. I think he would be because he sews and his makeup is phenomenal.
Oh, my goodness.
I think he would be the perfect candidate.
I wish I was with them.
People follow me. Crystal P is crazy.
Yes.
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and all kinds of stuff out on the street. Just find me somewhere and just say hi. I'm an approachable person.
She is approachable.
Very approachable. Very.
Call me, text me, you know, do what it is that
and
you
I want
to
say,
do.
Too, and I know I've thanked you already, but mm-hmm. I just want to publicly, for all the world that's watching, how booked and busy you are.
Uh-huh.
When my mother transitioned, you were there at her past, or had her wake. when I tell you that I didn't expect you to be there, but it was nothing more than I would expect of you as a person. So thank you for that.
I do pop up at hospitals and funeral homes. I don't tell people that I'm coming.
Listen.
I just pop up.
And then we found out that there was some family connection there, too.
Mm-hmm. Fort Gaines, Georgia.
Yeah. So I'm just.
About to make me cry.
But I just want to thank you for being there for my family. And thank you for being such a light to this world. And thank you, Jervis, for being
awesome.
The same.
Thank you. Go She's watch so awesome. Strange Fruit on YouTube and tell me what you think.
Okay, so we are going to end our broadcast today. Again, thanks for watching. We'll see you next Thursday on Full of Women Radio.
Thanks for having me, Cassie.
Thank
Bye,
you for
everybody.
Bye, everybody. Thank y'all for tuning in.